Episode 2 of Drunk on Comics, starting now.
Hello and welcome to Drunk on Comics. This is our podcast about comic books, conventions, and all other things nerdy. My name is Derek, and with me today at Drunk on Comics are my partners in crime. Joining me again is Tony, who you'll recognize from last week's show. But the bonus for us is that this is the first and certainly not last time that our good friend Kevin is joining us. So, Kevin, welcome to the show.
Hello, Derek. Well, thanks for having me out today. I feel special.
You are special.
Oh, Ed.
No, Kevin, the listeners last week got to hear actually quite a bit about what Tony and I read, what we collect, and you know what we enjoy. So if you...
Yeah, I want to take a moment to say I just finished up listening to that podcast, and you guys did a good job.
Thank you.
Yeah, so I
always like hearing praise from the people that are on our podcast.
A little self-promotion from within.
I hear that actually we've gotten some loving from the interwebs.
We have actually gotten a lot of good responses via Twitter, primarily. Speaking of that, I mean, I should mention for any of you that are listening out there, you can find us on Twitter, and that's at Drunk on Comics. You can email us, drunkoncomics@gmail.com. We just set up our Facebook page, and obviously we have our website, drunkoncomics.com. So check us out there, get in touch, let us know what you think. We always like knowing about that. But Kevin, you know, what is it that you collect? What do you like to read? You know, those kind of things, so people understand your level of nerd.
Sure. I gotta sit back and give you my little mini origin story, if you will. Back in the early 90s, I was friends with a bunch of people that just collected comics, and I just was in the background. Actually, before I even started collecting comics, we were all collecting the, I don't remember if anyone remembers the trading card set from the mid-90s that showed like a character on the front and then stats on the back.
Oh yeah, I had a lot of those.
And I still had, recently, it's a big box of them. And that's how I started, is actually seeing the characters, looking at the stats, and just like, oh, that character is really powerful. Oh, that character sucks my balls. And
who's this MODOK guy that's just a big head?
So I collected those, and then eventually went into comics, and I was just pulling out random titles, mostly Marvel, some DC. Whenever I got a chance to go to a comic book store, which didn't happen very often, so it's just some random stuff. Infinity Gauntlet, that was my first big series that just got me into it for a series of years, and then I was collecting up until I would say 1999, and then I stopped collecting all together, just because it was a financial decision that I made.
Which, and that's something that we'll probably talk about here a little bit later too.
It can get daunting. It can, and you know, and I would still go to the comic books every once in a while just to try to keep up. But as we all know, there's so many titles out there within their own universes. Marvel, DC, Dark Horse, are they even still around?
Dark Horse? Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Dude, thanks, guys. And yeah, you're going to have to work with me, because I'm old school, and that's where I've picked up in the last 3-4 years. I've been picking up a lot of Essentials, DC Showcase titles, so I have a nice collection of about 100 of those, and I'm slowly flipping through those.
they take a while.
Yeah, they do. So, but what I'm reading right now is all my old stuff. I like to hear some suggestions. It's not old now, but Walking Dead.
Yeah. Yeah, and
for instance, that was a great pickup. I've only watched the TV show sporadically, but the comic book's a really good pickup, and So,
well, speaking of recommendations too, listeners, if you guys got recommendations that we should pick up that we haven't heard of, Twitter us, email us, just let us know. We will try our hardest to stretch our wallets to pick up some new titles and kind of see what else is out there.
Absolutely.
And that's one of the fun things, you know, that's great about, you know, getting to hang out with you guys is that we do read a few of the same books, but for the most part, you know, Tony and I, and, you know, we'll sit there and talk about, oh, did you hear about this going on? You know, and he's like, no, because he's not reading that one. And it goes vice versa. And then Kevin kind of fills me in on a lot of the back stuff that I never read. But, well, cool. Well, guys, we are going to get into our first segment here, and that's what we call Off the Shelf. Now, here is your warning. We are going to talk about things that happen in this week's book, this week's books. I don't know if we're going to talk about any from last week, but maybe some from a few weeks prior. If you don't want spoilers, because if you haven't read your books yet, make sure that you hit pause right now, go read your books, and then come back when you're done. If you don't care about the spoilers, well, good, because we're going to give them. So, Tony, why don't you start us off? What did you read this week that you want to talk about?
Oh, probably one of the most phenomenal books I've read in a while, and actually series that I just started picking up. It was Wolverine and the X-Men number 12. Now, before getting directly into this book, if you haven't picked up the series yet, surprisingly, it is pretty amazing. I was always kind of an X-Men reader. When they split up into 20 different titles, I'm like, God, which one am I going to start reading? Everyone loves Wolverine, so I was like, yeah, he's in the title too, so maybe start reading that up. But Derek also pointed out that it's just phenomenal cast of characters and introducing new ones, which is always great instead of recycling the same old, same old. So this book right here was written by Jason Aaron, artist by Chris Bacalo. It was just pretty much a great story. The dialogue, something that we spoke of last week, where there's either a little too little dialogue or too much dialogue, just pretty much overall told the story. It jumped a little bit from past to the what's happening now, but it really showed some light on Rachel Summers, her character, from being in the future, her having to go and hunt mutants again, kind of shed some light on whose side is she really on now. And not to totally spoil it, but when you see at the end of this book, you kind of see which side she's switching towards.
Oh, go ahead and spoil it. I mean,
she just lets Hope go. I mean, they had her, and she just let her go.
And I don't mean to step on toes if you're going to talk about this here coming up, but one of the things that I really liked about this issue in particular was you got to see how much of a dark side she really had. And if you didn't know a lot about her from before, it was a great single-issue recap to give you a lot more depth to her character.
And her character, too, needs... I'm glad it came out because she was a Phoenix host. So kind of through all these books, you haven't seen much of her either. So this was a great story to explain more of who she was.
And this is, you know, I mean, honestly, this is a great tie-in for the Avengers versus X-Men. You know, we talked about this before. But honestly, if all of the books in the main Avengers versus X-Men crossover series could be this good, this would be one of the best crossover series ever.
I just love it. It was a whole giant battle book, pretty much. They were fighting each other, and it didn't turn into a team-up where, you know, it's a normal fight between superheroes that happens, and like, oh, let's make up and fight someone else. No, they were going after each other's throats.
Yeah, and I got to say, Chris Bacalo's art in this book is stunning. I mean, it's some of his best work that I've seen on this series, too.
I think one of the things, whenever he pops up, one of my new favorite characters is Angel. And in here, he just says, I didn't know I could do that. Just re-seeing his character being perfectly good, not a, you know, Warren type, having a dark side with Archangel. Just him being a pure thing of good and realizing he's got more powers and where his character is going to go.
And a little recap for listeners that maybe haven't heard about it. And Kevin, I don't know how much you know about it, but Angel has his mind is completely wiped. It's gone. So he is Warren Worthington in body, but has no idea about anything that's ever happened to him in the past. It's completely gone. So for him, he went through a segment where he actually thought he was an angel for a while, which was, you know, kind of interesting. But his whole relationship with Psylocke, aka Betsy Braddock, no recollection of that, no recollection of friends, any of that. So it really is an interesting story, because it's almost a new origin story for a character that, you know, honestly, I mean, you know, back in the day, yeah, he had wings. You know, that's pretty amazing, but, you know, that...
And money.
Yeah, wings and money. You know, I mean, and it wasn't really until he became Archangel where he actually had some good fighting powers, because, you know...
I think one of the best pages, though, is actually the last, when you see Kid Gladiator running away saying, "I'm not here because," as you see in the next issue, "Daddy's home." Gladiator is coming down. He is getting his kid, getting out of there. And what I'm especially looking forward to is the Phoenix Force, the Emkron Crystal, all that stuff is Shi'ar related. So that now the Shi'ar coming to Earth, stuff is just building up. It's going to get more intense, and it's going to be hopefully a lot more better reads.
Yeah, I would highly recommend this. Like Tony said, it is a fantastic series, so if you haven't had a chance to get out there and read it, and you're even slightly interested in the whole AVX thing going on, go pick up this issue. Honestly, it was probably the best single book that I read this week. So, well, this week, I picked up a pretty wide variety of titles, you know, that I went through. And the one that I decided I wanted to talk about most is Mind the Gap number 2 from Image Comics. It's written by Jim McCann and art, and I hope I'm saying his name right, Rodin Esquail. And Sonia Obak did the art on that as well, I believe colors and ink. And the one issue that I picked up actually had a variant cover from Francesco Francavilla, which is just gorgeous. And it wasn't until later that I actually saw the figure hiding in the black ink of the hoodie. Now, since this is only the second book, we're really just getting started out. The main character in this book, for those of you that haven't read it, is Elle Peterson. She got attacked on a subway platform in issue 1 and was left for dead and has been in a coma ever since. Her mind, or maybe her soul or her spirit, is currently trapped in a limbo-type place called the Garden, and there's a number of other people in there that are either on the verge of death or in a coma in situations like hers. One of the biggest catches to this book is that Elle's attack wasn't random, but it was actually pre-planned. The question here really lies in who did it and why. That's the big mystery that's going on. Now, the fun part about this book is that, you know, they've made it clear, and I do quote here, that everyone is a suspect and no one is innocent. So without breaking this book down page by page, you know, and having to do the same thing with the first issue, what's really got me intrigued about this book most is the level that Jim McCann is setting up as far as what a great mystery he's got here. I'm normally a superhero guy. You guys know this about me. And this is not anything like a superhero book at all.
Why are they all supervillains?
Well, everybody in here is with the exception of Elle and this other guy that she's met in this limbo place, everybody in here is potentially evil. And it's really one of the neat things about it is that they all have a dark side of it. Another cool thing here is that they are loading these books up with Easter eggs. So people that like to go back and forth and look for the little hidden things in there that are going to give clues about what could be happening and why things are happening, it's a lot of fun. I rarely go back and read a book more than once, but knowing that there are Easter eggs hidden in here, which they did actually have a big page of them in the first issue, and kind of, I think they got some negative feedback from that, going, "Quit giving all the good stuff away. We want to find it."
You have to say Easter eggs and anything in general, where artists and writers tie in other things. Like, it's cool. I'll be reading, you know, an Avengers, and they do give a shout out to Deadpool, or they say something because I love Deadpool. Well, and it's kind of those sort of things of like, sweet, they mentioned my favorite character.
Yeah. But these Easter eggs are story specific to this, where, you know, it's, you know, they're trying to give away clues about what's coming, trying to get you intrigued, going, wait, why? What is that all about? So it's a really neat thing. The cast of characters in here is pretty lengthy. obviously you've got Elle, but you've got her family, you've got her friend or boyfriend, the doctors that are in here. There are a few unknowns, and then there's the one bad guy, or at least potential bad guy, which they're calling Hoodie. Could be a hitman, but certainly, you know, is central to...
Does he wear a hood?
He does. Oh. He does wear a hood, which is why he's called Hoodie. Because otherwise, T-shirty just didn't catch on, I think. But there's a few reasons I did want to talk about this one. Like I said, this is not my normal type of comic. And for any of you that heard the podcast last week, you know that I'm a superhero guy, particularly a Marvel guy. But what grabbed me on this book was the art. Just beautiful, beautiful work on this. And it really excels in two areas. The first is the facial expressions of the characters. They are so realistic. They're so natural. And honestly, I mean, when you look at them, you really can feel the emotions of what they're trying to portray in there. The second part that I want to point out is the panel layouts and the angles of the shots. The best way I can probably explain it is that it's like watching a well-executed movie or a TV show. And because of that, the flow of the story is both very unique and also familiar all at the same time. The last part about the art is that the colors and inks in this are they're top notch. I mean, it really does help set the mood in there. Now, the last thing before we get off this book that I want to mention about the story is that the reason I wanted to bring it up to you two guys is that the best thing I can compare this to so far is the TV show Lost. You know,
that's exactly what I was starting to think of when.
Yeah, and you've got a huge cast. They've got a ton of secrets. They've got their dark sides behind them. There's a tragedy to get it started right off the bat. You got Easter eggs all over the place. I would highly recommend that any of you that are looking for something a little bit different or, you know, want to try something a little bit outside of your norm, this is one. And if you liked, you know, if you like shows like Lost and you like mysteries and you like that kind of stuff, this is a great one. This does actually remind me, too, a little bit of the comic book Mindfield. From J.T. Krule and Alex Konat, as far as the look of it. So if you guys, and if you're familiar with that and you like that, here's a great one for you to go over to. So you guys got anything else you want to chat on this one before we move on?
No, I think you've pretty much sold me on picking up a copy or
on yours. I was just flipping through while you were talking about that, and I could see exactly what you're talking about. Yeah, the panel layouts are crisp. The facial expressions are very well done. I could see myself getting into something like this.
Yeah, and it's a nice change of pace. This book did come out 2 weeks later than it was originally intended to, because they actually had to pulp the whole run. There was a printing issue with them. So I've been waiting for about 2 weeks for issue number two to come out, and glad it finally got here. So. From that, we are going to move on to a new segment called Kevin's Long Box. So, Kevin, take it away.
Behold my long box.
it's impressive.
It is. Well, for my long box this week, I want to talk about my favorite superhero of all time is Superman. Just before I really started getting out of comics, I got into Superman a little bit after the whole death of Superman issues started to come out. Then I really started to get into the whole DC universe with Green Lantern, Flash. They were around the whole time of Zero Hour, and anytime I could get my hands on alternate worlds or Elseworlds or anything pertaining to Superman, I'm going to pick it up. So the one I wanted to talk about today was Superman versus The Terminator.
The Terminator.
The Terminator. Because there's just one. No.
Not on the cover.
Yeah. Yeah. Superman versus the Terminator, Death to the Future. It's just a short four issue series. Done by Alan Grant and Steve Pugh. It was a real quick read. Large images. Most pages were single page drawings.
Big splash pages. Like, yeah. When did this book come out,
Kat? This is 99, I believe. Done with, I think it was a joint venture between Dark Horse and DC. But basically, the story goes down is you have Sarah Connor, John Connor. They're just they're wandering around, just hiding out.
Now, is it hot Sarah Connor, or is she frumpy?
Well, no. You take a look at it. It's not very hot.
No,
she's not very hot in this. But you know, I have several other things to jerk off at night. But they're running away, and then bam, here comes the Terminator, and it initially it starts off just like you would imagine, just anything starting with a Terminator. But oh, here comes Superman, and when I picked it up,
that normally happens.
Yeah, that's not that movie. Well. And one of the things that interests me about this is, like, okay, how easily will Superman defeat the Terminators? And he does it pretty easily. There's this interesting arc in the story where he's fighting Terminators that are just keep on coming into the present day, and then he gets sucked back,
back to the future.
Back to the future.
which side note, I believe earlier this week was Back to the Future Day.
Nope, it wasn't. That was a hoax.
Oh, it was a hoax?
Yep. Someone doctored that up. It's not until October 21st, 2015.
Oh. Yeah, I say we're a couple years away from Jaws 10. And
yeah.
So that, it's a couple more years for hoverboard technology.
Okay, I'm sorry.
I'm still optimistic that the Cubs are going to win the World Series, though.
Yeah.
That would be great. But he goes to the future, and in the past, John and Sarah Connor hook up with Lois Lane, and then she contacts Supergirl and Superboy, and so you have these big two huge epic battles, one in present day, one in the future, and then in the future, you have Superman meeting up with Steel. And actually, Steel was a character that I was reading back in the day, and he was an interesting character. At first, he just seemed like an Iron Man ripoff. Actually, that's exactly what he was, except that he had a huge ass sledgehammer.
So he was Iron Man and Thor's illegitimate child.
Oh, absolutely. So there's big battles, and then of course you have the whole idea in your head playing out while you're reading it. Okay, well, if this happens, shouldn't that have happened in the past? And you don't want to read too deep into it. It's just pure fun.
Well, now, the one thing I'm hoping is that they'll explain the origin of Cyborg Superman.
Actually, that's the, I'm happy to mention that was actually one of the big protagonists in that. In the book was the Cyborg Superman.
Nice.
But they don't explain too much of his backstory. They just kind of assume that you know who he is. And anyone who would just pick it up and read it, like, all right, it was just a...
So is he the god of the Terminators? Like, Superman is, like, the hero of humans... Cyborg Superman.
No.
They worship him and be like, yay.
No, if I recall correctly, Cyborg Superman, I don't know if they actually gave him a name at all, but...
Skynet. They call him Skynet.
He was an accident.
He's an accident. Most of us.
Yeah.
So Steel was an accident when obviously Tony Stark was drunk again, but managed to get Thor dipping a little bit into the meat as well. And oops, now we made Steel.
Yeah. But the big thing about Cyborg Superman, because he was an accident during, I believe, a failed experiment. He is now hell-bent on destroying Superman any way possible. And in this storyline, he's like, okay, well, today's harebrained scheme is going to look into more of this Terminator technology, and he figures out, oh, they're from the future, and figures out a way to communicate with those Terminators in the future and try to collaborate. A big, huge effort to destroy not only Superman, but the but the human race.
Yeah, so without giving everything away, because obviously Superman's going to win. You know, I mean, I think that's pretty much a given.
I don't know.
But, you know, ultimately, I mean, I think if Superman goes to the future, he should be able to wipe out all of Skynet. You would think.
You would think. But we're not going to spoil anything. I'm not going to spoil anything.
You're not going to spoil a comic that's 14, 13 years old.
Well, I hope that people will find this in the bargain then and scarf it up. It was a good read, and I encourage anyone to revisit this if they're a fan of Superman, Superboy, Supergirl.
So, Kevin, let me ask: if you're going through the long box, if somebody comes across it, what are you gonna think is a good value for that book? I mean, is it a dollar book? Is it a 50-cent? Or is it a $5 book?
No, I'd still say it's cover price.
Really? That good?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. If I recall correctly, at the convention, I probably paid about $2.
Oh, wow.
Per issue.
That's a pricey book for you.
It is. Well, which is a great lead-in when we do talk about our convention tips.
Yeah, and we definitely will. Before we get to that, and I'm sorry, Tony, did you have anything else you wanted to ask about the Superman versus the Terminator?
No, I just want to know why it isn't Terminators.
When there's thousands of them on the front cover versus
Superman. That's the mystery that
Well, I
never be solved.
But seriously, it's probably just the copyright.
Yeah, well, stuff.
Because there's other crossovers I've read too. Is it RoboCop versus the Terminator?
Well, and I'm sure that probably all the movies are the Terminator. You know, so that's what it is. But still, it is kind of silly. You'd think that they could copyright Terminators.
So, it was going to be an extra $5 in the processing office.
Yeah. All right. We did have a request on Twitter to talk about what indie books we like and what we're into. So I thought we'd maybe take a few minutes here and kind of just chit-chat about that. Now, I mentioned Mind the Gap earlier, but I was kind of hoping that we could kind of, you know, take a few minutes and talk about what we like, what we've read, you know, and for people that are out there, new or old, what you'd recommend them, you know, really looking into. So, Tony, what about you?
As far as indie books right now, there's some more that I want to get in depth later, so I'm going to go to probably one of my first big series that I jumped into, which was following Morpheus, Dream, and the whole Sandman series. It was very deep. It was very dark. It was very epic. Anyone that hasn't heard of this, Neil Gaiman is one of the most phenomenal writers ever. If he's got his name on something, pick it up, because guarantee you will love it. But just the concepts that he had in there, the Endless, the overall story arc with Lucifer, it made for a very compelling story that you just wanted to pick up the next book. That, to this day, is still one of my favorite series. Would pay any sort of money to have them do another series or two with it. Although, spoiler alert, Dream died at the end. But but he got reincarnated because they are the Endless and they cannot ever truly die.
Well, it's if it's a comic book, no one ever stays dead forever, unless you're
Uncle Ben
or one of Matt Murdock's girlfriends. Those are the only people that stay dead forever.
Now, Kevin, you got anything that
I do not.
No, I'm mainstream only.
Well, seriously, collecting, I didn't really pick up a whole lot. I read a bunch of Spawn. That was the only title out of the whole Image collection that I actually enjoyed. Youngblood, Gen 13, Savage Dragon, just all those titles, I picked up several of those issues, and I just never was into those. Really, I haven't picked up anything outside of Image, and a lot of people won't even call Image
indie. Yeah, that's one of the things that's hard now, because a lot of those books that would have been kind of considered, you know, independents are now mainstream.
Yeah,
absolutely. Well, and I mean, and Image really, you know, when most of the time when you're talking comics, you're talking about the big two, DC and Marvel. But Image, and I tell you what, this year, Image has put out some of the best new books and titles that I've seen in years. I mean, I'm impressed. I mean, I'm really impressed. Now, as far as things that I'm reading or have read in the past, I've always been a huge fan of Don. Joseph Michael Linsner's art, yes, it's cheesecake, but it is, you know, for the most part. But when he actually does his paintings, I mean, they're just stunning.
Much better looking than Sarah Connor.
Right, yeah. Yeah, Don, he if he would have drawn this, yeah, she would have been way prettier. But now, the downside with Linsner's art for me is that his men also look very pretty as well. They aren't your normal, like, masculine hardcore superhero, but, you know, the...
Are they wearing skinny jeans?
Skinny jeans and flip-flops. And they have a vest with their t-shirt. I don't get it. But, all good. I don't think we have to worry too much about pissing off the hipsters out there. I haven't really seen one of those at a con. Mindfield was a great 6-issue miniseries from Aspen that came out a couple years ago. That was written by J.T. Krull and Alex Connett. Mentioned that earlier. I would highly recommend going back and picking up those. Right now, the Manhattan Projects by Hickman and Patera, they're getting a lot of good hype. That, again, that's another Image book. I'm torn on it, on that book. I was starting to lose interest. New issue came out this week, and the first couple pages, I was right back into it. But then by the time the issue ended, I was like, oh, okay, well, maybe I'll give it one more issue. So I don't know. Hypernaturals from Boom Studios, that's written by Dan Abnett with art by Andy Lanning. That's a brand new book that came out this week. Interesting if you guys like superheroes and you want to try out a different superhero team. The basic idea is that, you know, in this future that there are people that have superpowers called the Hypernaturals, and they're a superhero team, and the whole team gets wiped out and killed. So they bring in a couple new recruits, and they pull in a couple people that have been retired from the team to have to recreate the team. Beautiful art in it, by the way. A couple of interesting characters, worth a shot. The Crow, the original Crow series from James O'Barr.
Oh, yeah, that's amazing.
That's one of my all-time favorites. You know, I mean, I obviously, when I got a tattoo of some of the artwork, I'd say I'm more than a little bit of just a normal fan on that one. I would highly recommend go pick up the trade paperback if you can. It's not too difficult. Battle Angel Alita, getting into a little bit of the, you know, the manga or whatever you want to call it.
And doesn't have a name.
Yeah, I don't know whichever one it is. I always get those confused.
Cute comics,
yeah. You know, cute little girls that kill things. That's a fantastic one. And then the other thing, we did mention this, and I don't know if you can call it an indie book anymore, but I finally, a few weeks ago, started reading The Walking Dead from, you know, Robert Kirkman, Charlie Edward, and Cliff Rathburn, and Tony Moore on the original few issues. But that's primarily what I'm at right now, you know, as far as you know, reading indie books.
You gave me a brainstorm of a few things that I did read. I was reading a lot of Oh My Goddess.
I've never picked one of those up.
But have you ever? Do they? They probably still make it because it was a very popular animated series, which really got me started on the comic book. It was just this cute series about a guy who wished for a girl and she. She came along with her two other sisters, and it was just an adorable series, and about love.
And does she kill things?
No death in the series. Oh, now, it was so cute. Now, on the complete opposite end of that, one of the series that I was collecting was a series called Cherry.
Yep.
Yeah, it was an adult comic book, and I picked up a bunch of those, and just goofy graphic stories for the huge pervert that I am.
And they fully penetrate your psyche.
You know, that's exactly what I thought during the amazing 3D issue. Which I think was Cherry number 17.
Why wasn't it Cherry number 3D? Like all the other bad movies that used to be made. Jaws 3D.
Oh, Piranha 3D.
Well, have you guys seen Piranha 3 Double D?
No, I have not seen it. I've seen the commercials though.
Oh, it was only in select cities, so it probably didn't come to our hometown. But yeah, those are two that I collected a bunch of, and now I'm all excited. Thanks, guys.
All right. Well, on that note, I've got one last indie book. Unless you had any others that you thought of. I've got one last indie book that I've been reading recently, and that's going to lead us right into our next segment that we call Booze in a Book. This week, Booze in a Book is Fanboys vs. Zombies from Boom Studios. It's written by Sam Humphries and art by Jerry Gaylord. I would highly recommend picking up all three of the issues that are out there. These are tons of fun. They're really relatable on a lot of levels and incredibly entertaining. The artwork's actually really, really good and quite unique as well. Now, what I would do on this, I'd highly suggest pairing this, and actually any of these issues, with a Sapient Belgian-style Trip Ale from Dark Horse Brewery in Marshall, Michigan. There's lots of flavor, good color, and a 9.75% alcohol content. So that'll give you just enough of the happy buzz giggles to put this book over the top. So
9.75. Jeez.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah, and it's not overly hoppy. It's not bitter at all.
Well, that's good, because usually when you get that high alcohol percentage, it's just there's some drawback to it.
Yeah, it's actually a sweeter beer, you know. But I'm guessing that they'd probably put in an extra lot of sugar in this one to boost that alcohol content too. So
yeah. But, well, if anyone's definitely give a shout out to Dark Horse. If anyone in the in Indiana, Illinois, Ohio, Michigan, should be able to find Dark Horse beer. It's good stuff.
All right, so something that we didn't plan on talking, but just because it was brought up before, so kind of want to throw this out there. Does anyone stay dead in comics? We all know the simple answer is no, they don't for the most part. But kind of what are your guys' feelings on that? I mean, right now, especially with AVX, we know Phoenix is a destroyer, but also of rebirth. Could that mean some more characters are coming back from the dead?
If they bring Jean Grey back, I might just have to be done with X-Men. And you're talking, I mean, I'm a huge X-Men fan, but, I mean, come on. How many times has she been killed and brought back to life already?
Especially because of that damn bird, too.
I mean,
but it's not even just that, any superhero. It's like it seems like they will die or go through, like Superman was dead. I mean,
well, yeah, it was. That whole thing was just a ploy just to get readers back in,
marketing tool, and that's what it seems like most of them are.
And you know what? In a lot of cases, it works. I mean, that's what brought me into Superman, and then when he came back, I stuck around. I picked up all of the issues, and I know it worked because at the time, they had four primary Superman issues, and then they actually added a fifth. Right, it wasn't a monthly comic; it was a bi-monthly issue called Superman Man of Tomorrow, and it works, but something like someone iconic like that you can't keep down, but. Some of your minor characters, to be honest, it's kind of disappointing to see them come back. And sometimes I hear it happens awful quickly, too.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was Fantastic Four is probably the quickest turnaround I've seen recently.
With the Johnny Storm?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, technically, I mean, when you look at when they die, I mean, that's a loose term of sometimes they fell down a well and were there for a year and then came back with a new cape and, look at me, I'm new Batman. Like, but I know the Fantastic Four storyline, that's kind of where I started re-picking up Fantastic Four, was when he died and Spider-Man came on the team. I was pissed to find out that he was still alive, but the story that they came up with what happened was good. But with that being said, though, there's a lot of the minor characters especially, but even big characters, it doesn't give the reader that much fulfillment knowing these people will never die.
Yeah, and I mean, I understand that. I mean, you know, you push the death of a major character to you know, sell more comics. But one of the things when, you know, you read comics, there's no real fear, you know, as to whether or not if somebody dies, oh, okay, well, yeah, that kind of sucks, but, you know.
Yeah, like, when I was really jazzed when Hal Jordan died, and then Kyle Rayner, he took over as Green Lantern. I'm like, okay, cool, this is going to be the Green Lantern, and that's how it's going to work and that's the way it did work for a lot of years. I mean, he briefly came back as Parallax, and he went away. I'm thinking, okay, good. Now he's gone, and he was gone for quite a few years.
Now DC's rebooted everything. Yeah, so
that doesn't matter.
Yeah, but DC does that every 3 or 4 years.
Well, yeah, DC. In my opinion, DC really screwed their whole continuity. I mean, there just really wasn't any, you know, for a long time, and so. I'll admit, I mean, as a Marvel guy, I have picked up a few DC issues now because they rebooted, because, you know, who knew what was actually going on in the DC comics? I mean, so for a guy who bought almost exclusively Marvel when it comes to the superhero stuff, for them to reboot and start over, I think it was a good thing in general.
Well, one thing that you touched on too, though, Hal Jordan was dead for quite a little while. Johnny Storm was dead for less than a year. Like, that's what pisses me off. Make it count, make it compelling, or why did you just do that? To sell a couple extra books? Oh my god, someone died? Don't worry, kids, he'll be back in 6 months. Like, a perfect example is Captain Marvel. They've brought him back a couple times, which, as a reader, and I love Captain Marvel as one of my favorite heroes, would always piss me off that they brought him back, because... But he's one of those people that, thank God, they haven't crossed that line to truly bring him back.
Well, yeah, and there is going to be a new Captain Marvel. Starts here in next month, I think. And it's Ms. Marvel is taking over the role of Captain Marvel. So, you know, I'm kind of glad to see that yes, they want to do that. The other, and this is a total side note, it's about time that Marvel actually started having a single character female lead, because the last one that they had was X-23, mm-hmm. which was a fantastic book in my opinion. But then they canceled that and pissed me off.
So Marvel doesn't have a single super heroine with her own title?
No. The last two that they had was X-23 and Ghost Rider, which I don't read Ghost Rider, but Ghost Rider was a chick. Couldn't tell you anything about it past that. But, you know, so there's none out there. I mean, you have all these awesome, you know, female characters, both in Marvel and DC. And, I mean, DC, off the top of my head, I know you've got Catwoman, you've got Voodoo, Batgirl, Wonder Woman. You know, those are four right off the top of my head that I know have their own individual titles. But, you know... Marvel, you know, for all of them wanting to push their, you know, their equality, having, you know, the gay marriage in Astonishing X-Men here a couple weeks ago, won't have a female lead. I don't get it. Maybe they've just killed off too many of them and refused to bring them back.
Yeah, how many girls have been resurrected? Not that many.
Yeah, but, no, and it always does bother me. I mean, because, you look, I mean, a death of a character in a comic book really should mean something. I mean, it should be able to elicit some emotion from the readers, but when there's no, you know, there's no fear about whether or not they'll come back at some point.
Well, that's what I think a good way to... Well, first off, they need to start making newer characters, characters that people will enjoy, because what I feel that they are doing is, oh, everyone loves this person, so we'll kill them off, get them quick emotional, but then we'll bring them back because we can't replace this person because we've invested so much time in them, when I think they need to start developing more some more characters.
So you want to see more of Morph from X-Men the Animated Series? Yeah, I don't know if anyone remembers the animated series that appeared on Fox in the mid-90s.
But
that's the character I was referring to.
Yeah.
It was from that show.
Well, and even though, I mean, it was from the cartoon series, the thing that I liked about it, though, is that when that character died, I mean, Wolverine was actually truly upset. And, you know, you see these other characters, and now the most recent death that I've read that actually I was surprised about and actually did, you know, draw some emotion out of me was Nightcrawler getting killed. And it was a fantastically written, you know, way to have him die. What Marvel's done, for those of you that haven't paid attention, if you've noticed, you're seeing Nightcrawler, you know, primarily in Uncanny X-Force, is that it's the Age of Apocalypse Nightcrawler that they brought back. I'm okay with that, because it's not the same Nightcrawler. And, you know, Wolverine and the other people that were friends with him, they still miss Nightcrawler, but yet you have the cool, you know, the cool character as far as his powers and all that.
Well, that's a perfect example of a fresh way to, if you didn't want to necessarily kill part of that character, bringing in, you know, another dimension, another multiverse person. If they do that too much, then it gets to be, okay, now what are you doing? You're screwing up the whole, you know, comic. But that was great, because now you get to re-explore and re-learn who Nightcrawler is, at least from that world.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it goes back to the Angel thing, when Warren Worthington technically kind of died, his mind got, you know, erased. Yeah. We still have that Angel. We're getting reintroduced to him. I don't know how to explain it, but just thank God they didn't necessarily just kill them and say, oh, here's a Phoenix hand, lay on hands, you're alive type thing.
Yeah. Now, this kind of raises an interesting question then. I mean, if you could actually kill permanently any one character in the books, who would you want dead?
Oof. Boy. I don't think I've... It's been a long time since I've ever... since I've, like, read something, and I'm like, I really hate this character. I guess the only thing off the top of my head I can think of would be Cyclops.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah, I was the exact same one.
Oh, okay, good. I felt a little dirty suggesting
that. He's just become such a whiny bitch. Well, I mean, it's like...
That's exact. Okay, so he's still a whiny bitch.
No, well, you know, he changed a bit. He started actually becoming a little bit cooler with the Utopia and, like, these are my people. But then I kind of lost it again with Schism, where he couldn't make up his mind for... Four prelude books of, he might make his decision. I don't know if he's going to make the decision. Did he make a decision?
Not yet.
I'm thinking of making that I might make the decision.
Yeah, that was a horrible miniseries. God. I want my money back for that one, Marvel.
Yes.
And the time I spent reading it. God, that was...
But that reintroduced the whiny bitch Cyclops. That was...
Well, and
what am I going to do?
And before he became part of the Phoenix Force 5, you know... His whole thing, Kevin, for you that you haven't read any of the newer stuff, is he's really kind of switched over to becoming more like Magneto, where, you know, not that these are just my people, but we are on the verge of extinction. We are going to survive at all costs. And, you know, it's for that part, it's kind of nice to see somebody else take over, you know, the villain role, you know, or that even anti-hero that Magneto really was. If you're not, you know, if they don't kill Cyclops, I would love to see maybe at the end of AVX where he becomes, you know, the new leader of the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants, because, you know, I know that when I do bad things, I always say, I'm being evil.
Actually, no, the person I think I would kill is Superman. I'd be the one to say, I killed Superman.
Ah. the other one that I would like to see that I'd like to see die, honestly, although she's not as bad now as she used to be, but Storm. I mean, especially if you read the Uncanny series from the 80s and into the 90s, God, I think she cries like four times an issue on average. It's like, oh, I'm scared of tight places. Oh, I don't want to hurt people. God, shut up. But the one thing that I will say on killing off characters, and one of the reasons why I've gotten so sucked into The Walking Dead, and, you know, I won't go into details on this just because of the fact that I know you guys are still reading it and there are a lot of other people out there reading it.
So this is going to be an anti-spoiler alert?
This is an anti-spoiler, a little bit. The great thing about this one is that Kirkman, he doesn't care. I mean, nobody is safe in that comic book. I mean, I've been shocked. But then again, this is not a superhero comic. These people, once they're dead, the only way they come back is as a zombie.
Well, yes, and reading a few issues, now that you're getting me into it, not knowing who's going to live or die, like, I love that world, that scene, that anticipation of what the hell's going to happen next issue. Not really comic book, but kind of sci-fi nerdy, you know, George Martin, his Game of Thrones series.
Well, yeah, but he does have the comic version of that.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That did come out. So yeah. Hopefully it gets more readers if they don't want to read huge books. Very good series to pick up, and I might have to look at the comic book form and see how that is. But
yeah, and actually I just saw first trade was on the shelf, I think, this week.
Okay, but spoiler alert, a lot of people die.
Yeah.
No!
Yeah. So I think that'll kind of wrap up that little tangent for us. We're going to get into our collecting tips here again this week, and one of the things that will kind of tie in here is the whole Fanboys versus Zombies comics that I mentioned in the Booze in a Book. All takes place at San Diego Comic-Con, and that's only a couple weeks away for those of you lucky enough to be going. I know that the three of us won't be. But we've got some general kind of convention tips, you know, that we'd like to share that hopefully make your whole experience, you know, a little bit better. Even if you're an old pro at this, sometimes, you know, seeing what other people do and hearing what they do can help. But especially for you new people, we kind of like to throw some out there. Kev, what would you say is one of your big ones?
Oh, my biggest thing is just talk with the vendor while you're there. Just start talking to them about something random, get a little buddy up with them, and then when you start looking through his stuff and you find what you like, lowball
them. That's one of the great things about conventions. Yeah. Is I find, especially if you're there for an extended period of time, you know, if you're there multiple days, you know, generally looking at the conventions, the first day is when you're going to get the best selection, but you know, the second day, you know, is going to be a lot busier, you know, with more of the people watching. But the last day of the show, that's when you can get some great deals. Yeah. Because they don't want to haul that stuff home.
Exactly. But for those who can only be there on that first day or second day, just ask. Because you're right, that last day, they don't want to do that. Load it all up and...
Well, and it goes back to the whole building relationships with people. I mean, it's, you know, if you show them that you're real, and when, just remember, though, that when you go in and you're throwing them a lowball number, what has always done well for me is, you know, just go, hey, I know you have to make money on this, you know, so, but just put it out there so that they understand that you're just not trying to steal, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And what I mean by lowball is within realistic. Like, I always try to think about it this way. Half off trade paperbacks, I'm going to try to get you around 60, 65%.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and the other thing that works with that is if all you're doing is buying one comic book and it's out of the dollar bin, you're not going to get it for 50 cents. But you know, if you're buying 45 comics out of the dollar bin, they'll probably work with you.
Well, also too, not just talking to the one vendor, but a lot of them have multiple other people working. So if the first person says no, ask the second person. Yeah. Until you get that number that you want, the best piece I ever picked up was this poster of Silver Surfer. It's on metallic, shiny type paper. It's like a mirror almost. Look, like you can physically see your reflection in his silver. It's amazing. And I kept walking by. I kept talking to the guys, trying to, you know, lowball them a bit. And then all of a sudden I go up, finally when I'm just like, you know, I'm going to buy it for the price that they're asking. I go up and talk to this other guy, $50 less than the first guy told me it was. I was like, I'm buying it from you now, and thank you.
Yeah, well, and the other thing is, don't just talk to the different people working in the booths, but, you know, if the comic or the item that you're looking at isn't worth your price, go to a different vendor. You know, I mean, unless you're at a really super small show, you're going to have a lot of different people there that will have the items that you're looking for, and, you know, hopefully you can find it something for the right price. Tony, I know that we talked before. Make sure you bring your backpack.
Yes, you know, yes.
That's a big one. There's a couple other things that I do want to hit on before we wrap up for those of you that are going. Organization is key when you go to these things. Make sure you take a list of either what you already have or what specifically you're looking for. More times than I can count, I've bought multiple issues of things not realizing.
I know. That's what happened the last show I was at. I came out with four of the same issues. And it be damned, I paid, let's just say too much.
Yeah. It does happen. Other thing, budgets, and, you know, when it comes to the budget, know exactly what it is that you're looking to spend. It's easy to overspend at those because there's a lot of stuff. Commissions, if you're planning on getting commissions from specific artists, I would highly recommend get there as early as possible. And if you're going to be there for multiple days, let them know. They appreciate it. Those guys are going to be working their butts off all weekend drawing, you know, unless you're in a huge hurry to get it back. But get there as early as possible. The last thing is that I suggest is talk to people. And I don't mean just the vendors trying to get deals, but talk to the artists and the creators that are there, you know, and find out what they're about, find out what they like, because you may find something that you had never even heard of, and you end up finding something, you know, good there. So, well, I think that's going to do it, unless you guys have any other tips for the convention goers.
No, I think they can... submit some of their tips too.
Absolutely,
on Twitter.
Yeah, you know. Speaking of, we'll run through our connections again here real quick. You can find us on our website. Just a brief note, that is www.drunkoncomics.com.
One thing with the website, it is slowly taking off to be the hub of news, info, artists. We want it to be that page that people go to first and foremost when checking out comic books, anything entertainment-wise with the industry, but it's going to take some time.
It's a slow process, but we're getting there. The one thing that we do have up right now that we've just got started is our Artist Alley page. You can go on there, check out some different artists. We're going to be adding more. For any of you artists that may be listening or friends of artists, get in contact with us. We'd love to be able to put your info up there, link back to your page, showcase your work, help you get a little bit more visibility. I do have, so we've got the website, we have our Facebook fan page, which that has just started, so apologize, we will be putting more updates on there. Like us on there, and then follow us on Twitter at Drunk on Comics. I've got a couple other just real quick shout-outs that I want to do before we get done here. The first is to some friends that we've acquired, actually, luckily, through Twitter. And that is Will, Chris, Mike, and JD. They have their own podcast called Converse in the Ninjaverse. Really entertaining. It's a fun show. Guys, go check it out. They're on iTunes. They're on Twitter. They're all over the place. Well worth looking. Also like to give a shout out to our friends in the band Domestic Problems, who have so graciously allowed us to use their music. So if you guys want to check them out, they have their own website. They might even still have a MySpace page.
Yeah, check out their MySpace page. It's really great. No, seriously, Domestic Problems. That's a great band that everyone should check out.
Yeah, really fun. Actually, their Facebook page I know has tons of music on it, as does their own personal website. really good stuff. You can also find them on iTunes as well. So that pretty much is going to do it for us today. You know, like Tony said, feel free, please give us some feedback. We'd love to know what you thought about it, you know, what you'd like to hear us talk about. So you guys got anything else you want to add?
No. Until next time, my friends.
Another gem.
All right. So say goodbye, Tony.
Goodbye, Tony.
Say goodbye, Kevin.
Goodbye, Kevin.
And I'm Derek, and on behalf of all of us here at Drunk on Comics, keep reading your comic books, and we'll see you next week.
Dance around.